Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Woo! Yes. I don't know why I wooed.
Matt's excited.
Well,
Matt's pumped.
We got off to a great start, Jonathan.
I guess we're pumped for this. We were going to talk about our expectations. Matt, it seems like you're excited.
Yes, and happy birthday, Jonathan, for the week.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I get a whole week.
Did you get my message?
I did. I wrote a reply. I'm one step ahead of you.
Oh, wait. Oh, yep. Just reading it now. Oh, good.
Setting social media on fire with our...
Yeah. Sorry, that was a bit late.
Facebook.com/ScreenVerdictPodcast. If you want to wish me a happy birthday, that's the best place to do it.
It's never too late.
Very cool. So, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's Volume 2. I believe we did a podcast on Volume 1. Did we like it?
You would believe incorrectly.
Wow, we didn't do Guardians of the Galaxy?
No. You got some Screen Verdicts Award nominations because you really enjoyed it, but I only saw it for the first time, like, this year.
Oh, well, there you go. People should be even more pumped for a Guardians 2 podcast because they didn't get to hear our thoughts on 1.
Mm. Oh, man, I just got a Facebook message from my friend Grace and said, how did it go? And I wonder if she's talking about the, like, coffee I had this morning with someone or if she's talking about the podcast.
Ooh, well... One of those is suitable to talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, I get very few messages out of the podcast.
Because they just know it went great. It's just assumed.
Yes. Yeah, they can just listen to it, I guess, to know how it went as well. Anyway, so I'll try not to be distracted by my social media messages. Anyway, I had quite high expectations for Guardians of the Galaxy 1. You had loved it. I think you've often got a good opinion when it comes to these superhero movies and things like that. And I like Chris Pratt, and it looked like it was a bit of fun, and the trailer had a good, like, musical track on it, and it met, if not slightly exceeded, my expectations. I really like the story. I like the idea of a scrappy, like, group of underdog, misfit sort of superheroes banding together to save the galaxy. I think it was really good. It was good characters. And I think, like, often these Marvel sort of films are fun, but very sort of uneven. But I feel like this one was, like, the Volume 1 was just a really good movie. It was consistent. I enjoyed the whole story. It was to some degree self-contained. I know there's some little things that tie in with other Marvel things. But I just thought it was a really good movie with good characters. I think if there were no other Marvel movies in the universe, I would have enjoyed it just as much. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first one too. You really root for the team. It's a good band of characters, some unique characters, like Groot is pretty memorable. Great soundtrack, pretty funny, good action, and fairly consistent too. I think I gave it an 8 out of 10 maybe. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I was pumped for two. Chris Pratt's just blown up even more since then, was robbed of Sexiest Man of the Year, in my opinion. He's making his case for 2017.
I'm not a big fan of the Sexiest Man of the Year. Like, they've made some very sort of weird choices, I feel.
Yeah.
Like David Beckham, like... I'm not sure if it was this year or the year before or something. That seemed like a weird choice for sort of 2016, like 2015, but anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like that was around 10 years, maybe even 20 years too late. Yes, big fan of
David Beckham. He's a good-looking guy. Yeah. Like, he doesn't look good, yeah.
He's just no Chris Pratt.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I was pumped for Volume 2. See, here's the thing. In my mind, I'm kind of growing weary of superhero movies. I'm kind of like, Hollywood, it's just like reboots and remakes and superhero movie after superhero movie. Come up with something original. But I say that, and then A, I watch all of the superhero movies, and B, more of them than not, I actually end up enjoying. I was just going to say, like, as I said, Guardians and Captain America, Civil War. One of, if not the best, Marvel movie. So I'm kind of in two minds about this. I'm kind of growing weary, but at the same time, I was actually still pretty pumped for Guardians 2.
I'm a bit like with these superhero movies. Where do they end? Like, where are we going with this?
Where? they end when the money ends.
Yeah, but, like, does this mean we're going to get, like, three movies a year, like Marvel and DC movies that, like, just, like, create a more complicated, tangled up sort of, like, all of that sort of stuff, like, you know, there's a part of me that's sort of like, oh, are we just like, we're going to die in like 60 years and it's just like, are we still following all the Marvel things and stuff? Like,
Star-Lord Jr. Volume 4 is coming out. Summer 2059. I'm pumped.
Yeah.
There is no end in sight, is my response to your question.
Yeah, I do like, the faults of The Dark Knight Rises aside, I do like Christopher Nolan. Hey, I've got this Batman story. We're going to do it in three movies. That's the world. That's the universe. And we'll wrap it up there. I do like that, knowing that there's some sort of end in sight. Now, I wouldn't mind if they said, we're going to do 7 films. We're going to do 15 films. But there is a bit of a, like, sort of endlessness to this sort of Marvel thing where I'm a bit like, I just don't know what's going to happen. Like, how long am I going to have to care about all these characters?
Well, let's get into to Guardians Volume 2. I think we will perhaps go by characters, because we mentioned that we like the team, so we'll maybe go through them and some of the things they've got up to and what we thought about them.
I tweeted at the beginning of seeing the movie, about to watch Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, so pumped for the soundtrack. Can't wait, or something like that, hashtag audio cassette or whatever. And Michael Kelly from House of Cards liked the tweet.
Whoa. I guess he's a fan of, I don't know, what is this band? Kind of like 60s to 80s kind of range of music, is that right?
I feel like it's like 80s, right? Oh, maybe 60s to 80s, yeah, I think, yeah, you're sort of right, like sort of rock, sort of pop rock or something like that. I love it. That's what I was most excited for about this movie, was what's the, make the mixed.
Yeah, well, you'll have to get the soundtrack, because in my opinion, it delivered. I thought it was just as good as Volume 1.
I just YouTube the soundtrack.
Fair enough. Nah, man, you got to get it on cassette. No, Zune. You got to get it on Zune.
Yeah, that is fair. That is very fair. So, anyway, it was good. It's funny, like, just moving, like, Guardians of the Galaxy 1, I saw my friend Brendan. Brendan, right?
Yes.
And the, like, end of the movie, he said, what did you think? And I said, oh, I really like it. It was really good. Easily the best Marvel movie. And Brent's like, oh, that says a lot coming from you, because you have pretty low expectations, right? And I don't know what I said to give the impression that I had low expectations for Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe just assume because I hadn't seen it. But I thought I was quite excited to see it. Like,
it's like, Matt, turn up the energy, mate. You're a wet blanket.
Yeah. Anyway. But the reason we were watching it, because I had expressed interest in seeing it.
It's like, Matt, what? Are you excited for Guardians of the Galaxy? Yeah, it should be good. It's like, oh, at least try to convince me. Put some effort in.
Anyway, so Guardians was, I was excited for the next one. I like the Raccoon. He was probably my favorite character.
The Raccoon. I would say, I'm obviously a big fan of Star-Lord and his jacket. Where would you rate his jacket in terms of, like, if the Drive Scorpion jacket is the all time greatest film jacket, like, where does Star-Lord rank?
I was going to put you up there and say I think Fonzie's jacket is like the best jacket, but that's TV, not film. So, Yeah, I don't know. I'll be 100% honest with you. I am blanking on film cinema jackets.
If you at home can think of any of your favorite film jackets seen in film, let us know. Facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. We might have to do a rank. I feel like at one point Marty McFly had a pretty good jacket.
That wouldn't surprise me.
We'll do some thinking. Yeah. But yeah, Star-Lord, big fan.
If we're just comparing with the Scorpion jacket from Drive, I think it's in that league.
Instant classic.
I think the Chris Pratt one I could pull off. I don't think I could pull off the Scorpion one.
For so long, I've been tempted to get it. I don't think I could pull it off as, like, day-to-day wear. But, you know, like, maybe Halloween or something. I think that would be a pretty cool outfit.
I feel that's a weird, like, you sort of go, like, I feel like there's a lot of things you could pull off in Halloween. Like...
Yes. Yes, it's...
look, not every day, but I could wear it the one day of the year you're allowed to wear just ridiculous, like... costumes where really there's no judgment on anything that you wear.
Yes. Fair, no, that's a fair point. I guess I would just be, I'd be pumped that I finally had like an excuse because I think it looks pretty cool.
I think you got to do it for Halloween though. I think you would look good on Halloween with it. And I do think that would be like, was one of your favorite movies. That would be a great Halloween costume for you.
Yeah. Get the leather driving gloves. Man, that's a good outfit. Yep.
Would you just back your face, or would you get one of those cardboard cutouts of Ryan Gosling's face? Little holes in the guys.
Or the or like the creeper, the creepy rubber mask he puts on towards the end.
Just back your face.
Big fan of Star-Lord in his jacket, and Groot. Groot was one of my favorite characters from the first, and. I guess he's changed the most. He's little. Like, well, let's kick things off with Baby Groot. What did you think of Little Groot in Volume 2?
I really liked it. Thought it was very cute. But I feel like people were so excited for Baby Groot in this movie. Yeah, so many people were going, oh, so excited for Groot. Like, it was all they were talking about. And I feel like people making the film knew this. So they did milk it perhaps a little too much. Like, there's a lot of, I think, fan pandering with the Groot in this film. But I generally enjoyed it quite a lot.
I somewhat agree, but I think Baby Groot just is that good. Like, they did keep returning to that well, but there was, like, a lot of juice in that well. Like, from the opening, the opening where he's just dancing kind of obliviously... So this catchy song, I forget what the song was.
Mr. Blue Sky.
There you go. While everybody else is fighting this like big gross monster thing, I thought that was hilarious. I thought Groot constantly going back and forth into the whatever it was, the captain's chambers, and bringing back the wrong thing that they were trying to steal. I thought that was very funny. I thought Groot not knowing which button to press on the bomb. Was very funny. You knew what was going to happen, but it was still funny each time they did it, and very satisfying when he eventually hits the right button. So, I do think they kind of lent on that a lot. But man, baby Groot has to be the cutest thing I've seen on a film screen in some time. I loved it.
Yeah, no, he's very good. We love Baby Groot. So, you know, he's very, very good, and I'm sort of, like, glad it seems like... That could be a bit of a spoiler. That could be jumping the gun a bit on a point that isn't really that interesting. So,
Some nice self-editing there.
Yeah. what do you want to talk about next? What about my favorite character, the Raccoon, played by former sexiest man alive, Bradley Cooper?
Yeah, he's kind of, he's sort of less likable, but that's kind of part of his charm. He's kind of gruff and, he doesn't really play by the rules. He's always causing problems by stealing those batteries or whatever they were. You know, that he's just kind of putting on a tough exterior and, I guess kind of the, has a bit of a rivalry with Star-Lord, and he can be a bit sort of... if he was actually in your group, he would definitely be very frustrating at times, but to watch as an audience member, I found him very entertaining.
Yeah, I love how he's very cynical and funny, and he sort of, like, says things like he sees them. I really like actually sort of honesty, and how he's sort of a character that's sort of rough around the edges, but really on the inside, he's a good guy, and always comes good. That being said, even though he's sort of my favorite character in the crew, very frustrating that he stole those batteries at the beginning. Well, that just caused a lot of unnecessary trouble, but not real, like, you know, sort of like, you go like sort of the benefit versus the risk or whatever it is, and definitely what they get out of that is not worth the trouble, the potential trouble it can cause. But I guess that's part of his character that's not really like, it's sort of like something within his nature, like it's sort of not rational the way he does that. It's sort of just, that's how he sort of like grew up and things. And the other thing is there's like a time where he's making fun of the person's name. What was that again? Like,
oh, yeah, Taserface?
Taserface, which I feel like just, like, at first, like, was funny, and then he just went on with it so long, and it wasn't that funny.
Yeah, I kind of agree. That's kind of like the inverse of the comparison I made before. As an audience member, I kind of grew tired of it. But in the actual situation, even though it wasn't that funny to keep pushing it, the more he pushed it, the more it got under Taserface's skin, which is exactly what he was trying to do.
Yes, that is true. And when one of those guys got pushed out into space and sort of froze to death in sort of that scene, some of the people sitting there went, oh, that's so sad. And then it like pans out, you see all the other ones, you know, and they're like, oh. And I'm like, look, clearly all these guys were the people pushing the people out into space before they got pushed out. Like, feel sorry for one of the guys, the first guy who was pushed out. Everyone else is a part of it.
I'm trying to remember that. I think they, what's the blue guy's name? The guy from The Walking Dead?
Merle?
Merle, yeah.
That was the name of The Walking Dead.
Hey, well, we'll call him Merle, Blue Merle. Yeah, I think everybody that took his side ended up getting pushed out, and everybody that took Taserface's side, I guess, got to stay on the ship.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that was how it worked.
Okay.
Yeah, fickle band of thieves. It's very Game of Thrones. You got to choose carefully who you side with.
What else is happening?
We talked about, we brought up Blue Merle. He was kind of an interesting character because he kind of starts out as sort of like the villain of the story. And you think, you know, he's this bad guy. He sold children into slavery and he gets cast out of the whatever the group is that Sylvester Stallone seems to be a part of.
He's sort of a villain light. Like, you never think he's going to be the main villain of the movie.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, but I agree with your premise. I agree with everything you said.
And he knew Star-Lord when he was young. Star-Lord was one of those kids. And are we doing spoilers? Do we
want to give? I don't know. If we do, I need to give a warning. What do you think? I don't really mind.
This hasn't been very spoilery so far, so I don't know if we need to get into spoilers. Let's not do spoilers.
I don't think we need to be honest. We'll probably allude to things, I would imagine, since the movie has been out for a while. So we might, like, sort of, like, if you've seen the movie, be able to tell what we're talking about, maybe. But I think it'll be pretty accessible if you haven't seen the movie yet.
Sure. So, well, I'll just say I quite like the development with his character, and some of the parallels between him and the raccoon made for quite an interesting character dynamic. And Yeah, I really liked the direction they took with him in Volume 2.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think this is one of the strongest parts of the film. And I think him and the raccoon, or Ratchet, was that his name? What's his name? Rocket?
Rocket.
Rocket, Ratchet, Rocket. Him and Rocket, I thought...
I think like, Ratchet is the kind of Lynx-y-looking thing from the PlayStation games, Ratchet and Clank. He does look kind of like Rocket, though.
Yeah. So we've got, Pearl and Ratchet.
Marvel experts over here. Send your angry emails to screenverdictpodcast@gmail.com.
I think they tried to escape, a ship, and I think their hijinks and shenanigans encapsulates what I like, and their development encapsulates what I like most about the first Guardians of the Galaxy film.
Yes. I would agree with that.
So I think that was the strong, in my mind, storyline of this film. Because the thing I may have liked a bit less about this film is it was more about the breaking up of our guys. Not because they were in a fight, but just because they all had their own little missions or things they were working on. And I sort of liked how the first one sort of like, oh, this person meets this person, and they start doing stuff together. Then a third person joins. Then a fourth person joins through. You know, it's sort of like the building up of the Guardians. I sort of preferred that a bit in the first film. A bit like, it reminded me of the Muppet movie, where, you know, Kermit's going on his journey, then he meets Fozzie, then he meets Gotham's own Miss Piggy, then he meets Ralph, then he meets the Electric, you know, like that sort of thing.
Well, I would agree with that. I think... I don't mind that... necessarily. I think it just depends on the strength of the individual storylines and that they bring them together in some way. So talking about some of more of the individual storylines, what's the big guy? Like the Batista WWE guy? Can't remember his character's name. I liked him. I think
we're doing a shock of the character name.
Batista, Blue Merle, Ratchet, Sexiest Man Alive. He had some of the funniest lines of the film, but I thought he also had a few of the jokes that fell flat. So I was a little bit up and down on him. I did find it quite funny that the Asian girl who had the little antenna coming out of her forehead, he thought she was so repulsive and kept on making jokes about how ugly she was. It was just very off the wall humor, and you know, he does kind of like care for and things, so it's not just mean, but the fact that he thinks she's so disgusting was just so random. I thought that was quite a funny dynamic between the two of those.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was pretty funny. Not something I was invested in watching the movie, but not bad.
And so I guess I brought her up. Now, she is the, assistant or right-hand person to Kurt Russell's character.
Yes.
Now, Star-Lord Chris Pratt, he doesn't know who his dad is. And he was sold into slavery. But in Volume 2, we get to meet his dad. And it turns out that he is not... Well, we were not doing spoilers, but I was going to say, he's from somewhere else. So that's all I'll say.
There's more to him. He's got some powers and things. That's probably fair. Like,
yeah, he ends up being quite a powerful and key character in the film. And that was interesting. Not necessarily that original, but I guess sort of interesting to see someone, you know, who didn't have a father, and then they get to meet their father, and then there's that kind of dynamic of getting to know them, you know, what you think they would be, learning out what they are, or what you hope they would be, and then, you know, how they actually turn out. So I liked that storyline, but I thought it was maybe a little slow in parts, and it didn't... kind of like as fun and as crazy as the rest of the Guardians could be. That part just kind of felt like, okay, like I get it. This is fine.
Yeah, I didn't love it. I felt like it slowed down the film a little bit, and also I feel like I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy for its sort of high concept sort of how it's dealing with the sort of supernatural elements of the galaxy and stuff like that through that storyline. I feel like it got more sort of like, not confused, I understood what they were talking about, but it's a bit more sort of like convoluted, perhaps, that might not be the best word, than like, because the thing I like about Guardians of the Galaxy is a ragtag group of underdogs with flaws trying to sort of save the day.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like, it's easy to understand sort of like the parameters of people's skills or powers. Like, this guy's an expert in bombs, or this guy's really fast, or this guy's really strong. But then when it gets into kind of, like, powers or superpowers or godlike abilities, that's not necessarily bad, but you kind of stepped out sort of, like, the mental framework of what you can expect characters in this world to do.
Yes. So, I didn't hate this, but I didn't love it. And I probably leaned more on the side of, like, I don't say I like that it was bad, but it's the thing I like the least about this movie.
And then one other thing that we didn't touch on was Star-Lord and his kind of romantic feelings towards, again, I don't know the name, Green Girl.
Yeah. Very good.
Are you rooting for them? Is this a jam, Pam and Jim sort of situation, or is this a what's the name? Gus and Mickey from Love? Where I'm certainly.
I like that you reference the Love Cup, because that actually touches on what I'll be bringing up in our housekeeping segment.
Oh, interesting! A little housekeeping teaser there for the audience.
Yeah, there you go. I honestly didn't get to go. I don't want that to be what the whole movie's about. Like, if it became all about those two, I'd find it tired of it. But I think it's, like, a good thing to have bubbling in the background. I like them together, but I also like that it sort of takes them a little bit to sort of move it. Like, it's not just like, oh, yeah, they, like, fell into each other so easy. I like that it's, like, a little bit tricky, but not so complicated, and there's so much drama that it overshadows the rest of the film.
Yeah, I like them as a couple, and if they would get together, I would be happy with that. But I guess there isn't a lot going on. So you kind of have to weigh it up between, if you don't really show much to do with that, then you don't care, because there's not a history there. It's like, oh, they get together, they don't get together, why am I then invested? But if you spend a lot of time on it, then you risk making the film about that and kind of slowing the rest of the film down. So it's a little tough to navigate. I think they erred on the side of underdoing it, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, that's the side I would rather them err on.
Yeah, because to me, Guardians isn't primarily a love story. So I think they erred on the right side of that. With her character, they focus more on the relationship with the sister, and where she is kind of, she was under arrest for something. She's kind of considered like a threat, a bit of a rogue, and you kind of see that there's competition between the two on how they were brought up, and again, a little bit like Star-Lord's relationship to his father wasn't necessarily that original, but I thought it was done well. I kind of like, there was kind of layers to it, and you did kind of sort of see the perspective of both sides, and it was kind of interesting to learn how their relationship came to be that way. So, you know, it wasn't a highlight of the film, but I thought it was done well.
I'd agree with that. I think that's a good insight. At the end, there's obviously the big sort of battle scene or whatever, the climax, and the whole crew comes together as you would expect. And I thought that scene was pretty good. There were some funny moments, there were some exciting moments. One or two bits, I think, drew on a little bit longer than they had to, but I thought it was a solid ending for the film.
Good Pac-Man reference.
Yes, good Pac-Man reference, which they laid the foundation for earlier in the film, which was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked how they team came together, and it was, I thought it was a satisfying final couple of scenes. So there you go, that brings us to the end of the film. Did you have anything else that you wanted to bring up before we give our screen verdict rating?
I work in a elementary school. Some of the boys said they had seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I said, what did they think of it? And one of them said, it was too funny.
Too funny?
Yeah.
I didn't come here for the laughs.
Yeah.
I've been lied to. I've been misled.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, this cheesecake's delicious, but I want steak.
Yeah, yeah. So, I thought that was a funny comment. That's all I had to add.
There you go. So... I wonder how that translates to a score. I'd love to know what that kid gave it out of 10.
Yeah. Can't remember who it was now, so I can't find out.
We'll have to follow up on that in a future housekeeping. But for now, our screen verdict rating, guess I'll kick it off. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought it did a... great job of bringing back sort of the best elements of what I liked in the first film. Great characters, great action, really funny. I thought there were a couple of jokes that missed, but for the most part, the hit rate was pretty great. I thought the pacing was pretty good. It slowed once or twice, but for the most part, it had my attention. And I was really satisfied with the direction that all the little, the main storyline and the little side plots took. And it's pretty memorable. I think Baby Groot is going to stand out in people's minds. I'll definitely remember that for some time. I'll definitely be humming the soundtrack. So yeah, overall, I think it delivered, and maybe even slightly pipped Volume 1. I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10.
Whoa, okay. I think that it was a good film. The soundtrack delivered on my expectations. I thought it was just as good as Mixtape Volume 1. I thought the performances were good. I liked the story. I thought it ended well. However, I don't think it had the consistency of the first film. And I definitely didn't enjoy it or think it was as good a film as the first film. The thing I didn't talk about the first film before is I think the stuff with his mum and sort of the reveal that comes in later with her and in the first movie was done so well, such a nice, subtle, emotional sort of core for that film. So I just don't think this one touches the first one, to be honest. But I still really enjoyed it. Definitely didn't ruin the franchise. I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. There you go, not too bad. I'll have to rewatch the first one, because I don't think I've seen it since it came out at the cinema. But, yeah, really enjoyed them both. Giving this one a slight edge for now, but I'd be happy to rewatch them.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's our screen verdict ratings. Housekeeping. Yes. Matt, you said you had something. You teased the listeners. Tease no more.
Yes, I did. So let me just... I've just really got to change rooms because I think this room needs to be used for something else. So.
Don't let those interns tell you what to do.
Okay. Going up to different... Oh, I can just... I'm going on Podcast HQ. Can't believe I've been here. Okay. So let's have a look in our housekeeping segment. Let's open the door to housekeeping. So I'm going to get a jingle for this. Anyway.
We can only make so many creaky door sound effects.
It's open. Okay, so a couple of podcasts ago, we reviewed the television show Love.
Yes.
Yes.
With mixed reviews. Indeed I did.
You were not a big fan of how Nikki treated Gus. You were quite upset about it. I spoke with the creator and star of Love, Paul Rust.
Oh, wow.
I brought him your complaint, and he had an interesting theory and some interesting thoughts on your complaint.
I want to know what you mean by you brought him my complaint. Like, did you play him audio from the podcast? Like, I don't want the Screen Verdict podcast getting blacklisted by Judd Apatow.
Well, I'll play you the clip. I'll play you the clip from our chat.
All right, I'm nervous.
And yeah, you can respond to his thoughts. Okay. I guess hopefully you can hear this okay through the Skype call. Let me know if you can't, and I can always send you the link and tell you the time code.
All right, I'll let you know.
Vicky sort of gets together with one of her exes and doesn't tell Gus about it, and then sort of in the final episode, it sort of goes, look, let's just make it all exclusive. Let's, like, you know, I have a friend of the podcast with. He hated Vicky for that story arc. Where do you think the audience is meant to be left with Vicky at the end of that? So at the end we got really excited about that story because it's bothered me when I watch TV shows. Men can cheat and be adulterers, sort of. A lot of times it's unremarkable. Like, it's just a part of the fabric of the show. It's like, of course this guy cheats. And they never have to atone for it. And not only is it ever, it's super rare to begin with to ever see a woman on TV, quote unquote, cheat. But it's even rarer that she does and then there's not consequences. Maybe consequences are good in life, but, like, sometimes with television, when somebody gets found out and punished for it, it feels a little like the TV show is punishing how some people struggle, you know? And so, for us, we thought of it as less about, oh, we're trying to rile up the audience, and more about putting them in a position of having to identify with somebody who would do something like that, which I'm learning more and more with the show. The more something mirrors an experience they had, the angrier it gets them. So I don't know your friend, but if he's cheated on or has been suspicious of it, I think that probably sticks a little bit more in somebody's craw than if not, you know. Yeah, I'll ask him about that. And then he'll just be in the jaw.
No, he's a nice guy.
Oh, my God. Paul Rush just threw shade at me.
Yeah.
What a savage. What a savage.
What, sorry?
Just in like a pub, just like in a public forum. Just goes, just says, this guy, he probably got cheated on, so that's why it bothered him.
So, Jonathan, would you like to screen God verdict share your past trauma or insecurities? Like, what? Like, he's your forum, John.
Listen here, Paul Rust. I think he said one interesting thing and then a whole lot of nonsense. So he said a lot of times in TV shows we see men cheat and then face no repercussions for that. And that's interesting. Maybe that's true. And I think that that's a bad thing because I'm against cheating whether it's male or female. And so if somebody cheats as a male character on the TV show, I'm looking for justice for their comeuppance. And perhaps that isn't done enough on TV shows. But just because other TV shows get it wrong with men doesn't mean you should get it wrong with a woman. She doesn't get a pass because she's a woman. It's 50-50. It's equal. Cheating is bad whether you're a man or a woman. She gets no pass just because of other TV shows' mistakes. And then he says, oh, well, maybe, you know, it'll force you to identify with someone else's struggles. "Oh, I feel so sorry for you, Mickey. You have low self-esteem or a poor dad or you're a sex addict. Therefore, it makes it okay that I'm supposed to forgive you or go, oh, well, I can empathize with that. She made a mistake." No, there's no excuse for it. Like, cheating it. Oh, my goodness. That doesn't make you deep. It doesn't make you go, wow, we're, like, really getting people to, like, delve into, like, someone's psyche. It's like, no, she's a horrible person, and I don't care how you rationalize it, poor Rust. I'm not going to root for Mickey.
Do you know what I've noticed? I've noticed there that you sort of addressed the points he made. He didn't answer his question about whether you've been cheated on or suspicious.
Well, this just goes to show that Paul Rust has no idea what he's talking about, because I haven't been cheated on, or to my knowledge, I haven't been cheated on, and never suspected with any serious suspicion of being cheated on. Of course, I've had relationships not go as I expect, or, you know, been upset with a girl, or things happened or didn't happen. That's normal. But in terms of cheating, no, it's not a sore spot for me. I just think I happen to have the correct moral stance on it, Paul Rust, that cheating is bad, whether you're a man or a woman, and I won't stand for it, no matter how many crappy rationalizations you throw at it.
Yeah, if I can be honest, like, I feel like knowing Bonnie, very out of her character. There's no way she's cheated on you, in my opinion.
Well, we can ask her. We can ask her on the podcast. We can ask her.
Would she appreciate being asked that on the podcast? Anyway.
That was the worst time to take a sip of water.
I don't know your previous girlfriends as well, so I don't feel like I know them well enough to comment one way or the other.
Yeah, usually it's a matter of them not wanting to date me in the first place as opposed to cheating on me.
Well, that's my...
lucky I got a good one now, so... Yeah. How's your love life, Paul Rust? I'm engaged.
Yeah, he's married, I believe.
Oh, well, whose side are you on, Matt?
I think his wife created the show with him.
We'll see. We'll see whose marriage. We'll see whose marriage lasts longer. Paul Rust.
Some more exciting news from my chat with Paul Rust. I was able to get a scoop on a spoiler for the next season.
Ooh, we love a scoop.
Because,
scoop of ice cream. Scoop of information.
Oh, sorry.
Just listing all the kind of scoops that I like. Anyway, continue.
Oh, yes. So he was taking a break from shooting season 3 in his trailer, and I could not but notice he was wearing a suit, so I probed a bit about that. So here you go, guys. I love it. Season 3.
Some detective work. I like it.
And you will be wearing a suit at some point this season 3?
I'd love for you to think that I got dressed up really nice, but yes, we're shooting. Just you can tell yourself that I dressed up nice for this. But we're shooting right now, and so your viewers, when they see season 3 and I'm wearing the suit, they can go, "Ah, that was the day he did the interview."
I like to think that you were doing the interview today. So you scheduled this suit scene for today. Look out for that suit, guys, in season 3.
You just wanted to share that you made Paul Rust laugh.
Yeah.
Well, I have no love for Paul Rust and anything that he laughs at.
I feel like you just threw Paul Rust down to the bus, so I thought I'll play a clip that humanizes him a bit.
Yeah, what's more human than some corporate guy in a suit?
Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. That's housekeeping.
Very cool. Well, let us know whose side you're on in the Jonathan Cook Paul Rust rivalry.
I feel like I was a bit nice to you in saying that you wouldn't punch him in the jaw. I'm now worried you might.
Oh, man. Paul Rust, you're welcome on the podcast anytime.
Oh, good.
We'll see if we can bring you around. Well, very good. There you go. Some interesting housekeeping. A fun Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 podcast. What do we have in the works, Matt? What do we have to look forward to?
Don't know. Master of None. When I finish that, we can podcast on that.
Yeah, Master of None. I've watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yep.
I'm sure you'll get around to that.
We will be doing Cars 3, don't you worry.
Yeah, I've heard one or two people talking about this Wonder Woman.
We should do that.
And as you mentioned...
I had some friends that were going to see Wonder Woman, and I was going to see it with them, but then my invitation got revoked.
women only, I guess.
No, I think it was a mixed group.
it was just you.
It's me. No,
I'd love to blame it on my gender, but it was just me.
No, if I got invited, that would have opened the floodgates. Like,
fringe friend.
Yeah. I wasn't a fringe friend to everyone in the group, but I was a fringe friend to some people in the group. So all of a sudden, that would have meant it became a 50-person event. I think this was not a Brendan Taylor media outing.
Well, I'm sure you're the core member of a friendship group that wants to see Wonder Woman, and we'll make that podcast happen. And
yeah,
as you mentioned, Cars 3, which could be... This is quite a milestone, so I'm not sure if the listeners are aware, but we are coming up on podcast number 200.
I'm sure they've been keeping score.
They've got on the chalkboard at home. They're tallying it up. Yes, very close to podcast 200. I'm sure, as most of you know, we started off with a Pixar podcast as number one. So very excited the Pixar film coming out very soon.
Which reviewed Cars 2?
Yes, not just the Pixar podcast, but we saw Cars 2 right before we did our very first podcast. And we'll go watch Cars 3.
Cars 2.
And do number 200.
The origin story. Yeah, it's part of the origin story of the Screen Verdict podcast, Cars 2.
Part of the mythology. The legend that has become Screen Verdict. So, yes. Yeah, I'm super pumped. A lot to look forward to. A very exciting time in the Screen Verdict timeline.
Mm. Yes. Where will you be when you listen to Screen Verdict 200? You might not know now, but you'll remember it for years.
I was going to throw out some other sort of famous historic events that you can compare it to. But then as I went through them, my mind, they were all tragedies. And I was like, oh, do I really want to compare Screen Verdict 200 to, where were you when JFK got shot?
The moon landing.
There you go.
I thought you were going to say that you did it because there was nothing comparable. You thought they wouldn't do our 200th podcast justice.
I'll leave that up to the listeners to decide. Well, there you go. Very good.
Oh,
I'm pumped. Well, hope you're excited too. And we look forward to catching you next week.
Yep. See ya.